Commission, the Commissioner received the evidence that you prepared, and thank you for preparing it and seeing that in prior to the hearing. Except for us, we didn't get to read it beforehand, and think about some questions we might want to ask you. So you don't need to read either of those documents out to us, because we've read them already, but you're very welcome to highlight key points. And as other submitters have done, just leave us with a clear impression of the key points from your point of view that you want us to take on board, and then we'll see if we have questions.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I've just highlighted some points in here to point out to you, sir. Yeah, I farm with my wife Jenny at Wendon, which is 30 k's north of Gore. We own 240 hectares, lease 250 off my parents, which are next door, and we're lucky enough that they still help us out. So, continuing on with the farming, the family farm.
Yeah.
We've also got three young boys, so we are mindful of the future. We want to have a positive impact on what we do and not leave it in a worse state, as most farmers, I feel, probably are. Just a whole lot of stock exclusion. I know you've said about it being a national rule, but we support that sheep are not included in this rule.
Yeah.
It's very helpful for us, weed management and the practicalities of it. We've had a land environment plan done from Environment Southland, which we found very positive. One thing it pointed out was we would have to do 16 kilometres of fencing over both properties to exclude cattle from waterways. And a lot of the waterways that were shown up aren't actually running water, they are hollows that, like, they'd be running water today, but tomorrow they'd be clear. So a lot of those we feel probably wouldn't need fenced, but we do manage them at this time of year. A lot of electric fences are used to keep even sheep out of those areas, just to stop overflow from thing. Well, another point there is, if farms were fenced 20, 30, 40 years ago without water schemes, so a lot of the paddocks are laid out to get natural water into areas for stock, which makes it very difficult for us to then fence them up to exclude waterways. It would make some very awkward check paddocks and just movement awkward.
Because we have placed a water scheme in place on both properties where there is troughed water in every paddock,
right,
or block, so yeah, so the waterways.
Yeah, that's one thing we're quite proud of, that we've got stock water in everywhere, so. And we've found a big improvement in stock from that, so. Subsurface drains, following on from the last one. Yeah, one thing we are against is having to locate them all on a map. Well, I just think that would be impractical. I don't even know where half of them are. My father can guess and tell me where they are, and we can spend half a day looking for one and still be looking for it at the end of the day. Areas change, they dry out. We think there's a tile there, and it can be 20 or 30 metres in a different direction. So actually locating these on a map would be a lot less. For physiological zones, it would be a big fat pen and it would be there, but exact locations would be impossible. More manageable solution we think for that rule would be to have outlets into waterways located, because we know where 99% of those are. We can walk straight to them, and from there we can look up the gullies and you can see where they're going. So, and that's where the water's coming from, so if we know where the outlet is, I think that solves the problem of what's coming into the water.
Yeah.
The next point, cultivation on sloping ground. Most of our farm is rolling to steeple. I call it flat, but my wife doesn't seem to think it's very flat. This rule has a big impact on our farm. In the last 3 to 5 years, we've been using best practice in the winter for grazing, and that has had a big impact on water loss, or sediment loss, I should say. We used to not look at a paddock, we just put the sheep in there and graze from the bottom up, but now we're doing things a lot differently and it's having big impacts, which is positive for everybody. All the way through, I think best practice. And a lot of that came through from that report, that best practice is, I think, the best way to go. and without losing lots of land, because lots of the rules put a lot of impact on areas that we can graze. And I think 3 metres, a 3 metre buffer is enough without going up to a 20 metre buffer, because a 20 metre buffer is a huge area of land in some paddocks. The farm environment plans, we don't have too many issues with these. I think they're positive. We probably informally, and I think a lot of farmers probably do them informally now without actually writing them down. So it's just a matter of, as long as it's not too onerous a task to too much detail, if you get the buy-in from the farmers, you'll get the right information put in and it'll be practical for everybody. As long as we can do it ourselves, if we have to get consultants to do it, it'll get done, not get read, and get put on the shelf. The one thing I do query about the farm environment plan, or the management plan, is the dating. I feel that if it dates from the 1st of June to the 31st of May, this overlaps a lot of people's winter, or cuts them in half. A lot of people start grazing end of May onwards. So if it was a different date, say the end of March, or 1st of March to the end of February, it would put all one winter into one plan, and not be any overlapping of one paddock wouldn't be in two years, really.
Yeah.
Two plants. Now the intensive winter grazing, we feel that many parts of this plan will result in negative results for the environment, and a lot of this will come through intensification of stock into smaller areas, especially that 50 hectare rule. We currently are under 50 hectares, but only because we use fodder beet, which is a high input, high output system. If we were to go away from fodder beet, we would be going back to being over 50 hectares again, which, yeah, if we had to get resource consent, would be a bit put off for us, so we would stay with the high input, high output. But it's all on one area, like a small area, so we wouldn't be changing stock numbers, but it would, yeah, so it almost has a negative impact by putting a lot of stock into a small area as opposed to spreading them out. And it's been touched on, the percentage would be a better area. I've said 15% to give us a bit of a buffer. In conclusion, the only other thing I've said is, where will the funding come from? It'll come from farmers. We're already stressed enough and under a fair bit of financial pressure. We don't need more. And I still, again, the last point, best practice, I still think best practice, and it's been touched on, education from Environment Southland is the best way forward. And we've learnt that in the last 3 to 5 years, so we're getting there. It just takes time. So, nice and brief.
That's alright. And just before I do pass it over to Pam for questions, just thank you again for putting your evidence together. It's very helpful. I just, Morris, any questions?
Oh, thank you. Yes, thanks very much, Darren. Now, the Royal Revenue Submission, you talked about tile drain outlets and monitoring those. What did you have in mind when you said they could be monitored? What sort of monitoring would be appropriate?
Oh, I don't know, I'm not an expert. You can see when they run dirty, you can see and you can tell if there's stock up there, so you know that something's going wrong. So every farmer sort of knows their farm. So I don't know whether it's actually monitoring at a registered level or just a self-monitoring, I think, is enough to keep an eye on what's happening up each gully. And
so if you saw something that didn't look right, you'd be able to go and do something about it.
Yep. Mm. Yep.
Okay. And you also talked about exclusion of cattle and deer. You suggested that it could be over the winter or perhaps over a certain stocking rate per hectare. We have something in mind. We have talked about this before, and some farmers said, oh, no, it's not a very good idea, but it's interesting to hear you say that. So you've got a brilliant idea that could be very helpful.
Well, we don't run big numbers of cattle. We have about 100 head on at any one time, but we only have them in small mobs. Oh, at the moment, the biggest mob is 60, and they're spread out over 7 hectares on a tussock block. And there is a creek running up through there, but they have very little impact. Well, it's not a creek, it's just a gully. It'll be running water today and be dry again in 4 days' time. So they don't have very much impact. So I know it's like throwing a dart at a dart, picking a number, isn't it? So. But it was said earlier, 6 head per hectare, or that sounds pretty reasonable. But every situation, every farm's different, so, and cows probably different than others. So. But if you had a big mob of 500 cows in that 7 hectares, it would be completely different. So.
Okay, thanks, Darren. And Jenny, thank you for coming.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. Wing. Whereabouts is your farm located? Relation to Wakai?
Just about 20 km south of Wakai.
Just in your submission, you talk about a runoff from a steep slope, that there's no waterway at the bottom of it, and that should allow utilisation of a steeper slope. So how, if that were to be applied to your farm, what would that change in terms of current rates?
We probably already put those changes in place just with winter grazing. Best practice starting at the top, moving down, instead of in the past we've always started probably at the bottom and gone up, and the dirt's, well, we don't get a lot of runoff, but every now and then in the heavy rainfall there'd be dirt maybe 5 metres on the other side of the fence. But yeah, from grazing from the top down we don't get that anymore.
So it wasn't too onerous for you just to adopt that?
No. It's a bit awkward sometimes trying to get baleage to the top of the paddock, but we usually find ways around. Yeah. All the sheep go with that.
Now, you've done a farm focus plan.
Yep.
What's the difference between that and the environmental management
plan? Oh, it might have been the environmental plan that we did. It was, we had a land sustainability officer come out.
Yeah, very briefly, I wanted to ask a couple of questions about the land sustainability plan. How difficult was it for you to fill in, and how much time did it take you to do it? And my second question you can think about too, which is it of any benefit to you, or do you feel you were just ticking a box?
Oh, we didn't. We had the land sustainability officer come and go through it. Well, he came and drove around the farm and took photos and came back 2 weeks later with the plan. So that was very simple.
Yeah.
And then sat down over a cup of coffee and went through it with us. It wasn't onerous on us at all. We've looked through it and adopted a few things out of it, but there's probably more in there once we sit down and study it, because we've only had it done, it was at lambing time last year, I suppose.
Right.
So, yep, we're in the process of adopting some parts out of it and picking up more out of it. So.
It's all dog-eared and well-read. Studied?
Not yet.
We're working on it.
Right, it'll get there.
Yeah, just sort of follow on from the farm plans. How often do you think those should be updated?
Well, if it's a status quo situation without any major farm changes, probably every 3 or 4 years, but then there's, with each paddock, I suppose, going into winter crop, that probably has to be looked at every year. So there will be yearly parts of it that need updated, but other parts will stay the same.
Okay, well, that's fine. Thanks.
And I have no further questions, but thank you again very much for coming in.
No, thank you.
So that's the end of our submitted for today. So we adjourn for the day. We reconvene at 9 o'clock in the morning. Thank you.